Good morning. It is 8:04. You are listening to KBOO in Portland. I'm Lynn. I'm here with...
I'm Ani. At least I was last time I checked.
Okay, good, good. That's good. That's good. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and we're on a discussion about urban wildlife and the natural world coming home, the coyote. I've started this because I've just been hearing so many coyote stories about not just lovely mythology, but, you know, that wily, tricky, sneaky, pesky, cheaty god of the Wild West. He is, I read this one thing, he's the original Marx brother. And they're coming back to the city. They also can represent things falling apart. Is it that? We have a lot of urban fauna that is out of control, like raccoons, rats. My God, the rats in this city. Things for them to eat. Mm-hmm. People's cats.
For example.
However, is it really good for humans? Do we need to have, those of us especially in the city, do we need to have more of a relationship with the natural world? Is coyote coming back kind of helping us do that? That's his way. There's part of his mythology that he's kind of like Prometheus, bringing fire to folks, bringing life, bringing death of some things. But a lot of those things need a predator.
Who doesn't besides need us, a good predator.
Besides
now
us, you know, can we live with other predators so close to us? That's especially in Western civilization, that has been a thing for a very long time. I ask this question, dear listeners.
She does.
What Most do y'all think about this?
I have to say, first of all, as Lynn pointed out to me, it is Vulture Awareness Day. And I'm so happy.
No, that's tomorrow.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. It's so close to Vulture Awareness Day. I get overexcited sometimes.
In fact, between 11 and 3 at the Audubon Society in Heron Hall on 5151 Northwest Cornell Road, they're going to have a big presentation about the vulture, another predator who can be useful.
They have a popular Cathartes aura. I love the turkey vulture. What can I say? And this leads me, I guess, to beyond the mythic, people's reactions to the critters that we see around us. I realized the other day when I was floating on the Clackamas for the very first time in my life, because, you know, I think it's important to leave some experiences to your later years. I think it's it's good not to get everything out of the way when you're a kid, you know? So there I am, friends teaching me how to float down a river and relax. It was nice.
Now, I'm assuming you were in a flotation device.
I was.
Okay.
I was in a tube.
In a tube, okay.
Okay. So I'm floating down the river, and there's vultures, you know, kind of all over the place. Well, circling directly overhead, which, I don't know, it did make us a little like, well, that's a bit ominous, isn't it? Like, they have no faith that we're getting anywhere. Okay. We were kind of still as we were floating down the river. I suppose that's true. Made sure we kicked our feet every now and again. There were also many vultures sort of on the shores, picking through, you know, bits of rock and whatnot. And I actually said, because I love turkey vultures. They're one of my favorite animals on the planet. I'll admit this freely to anyone that wants to actually listen. And I said, oh my God, those birds are so beautiful. And yeah, in telling that story to folks since, in relating my near ecstasy at seeing so many vultures so very close, because they're just there on the banks and they're not particularly caring about us floating down the river. The word beautiful, apparently, is not one that people are used to hearing with vultures. And I know, you know, sometimes my tastes, they're a little different than others. But I have gotten some really strong responses to that. And so it leads me back to thinking about how it is we look at the natural world, so-called natural world around us. That we don't consider ourselves a part of, by the way, you know, I mean, that's a whole nother part of this conversation. And we classify the animals that are cute and deserving of, you know, love, affection, saving, and all of that, and the animals that are a little freaky, you know, Vultures. Ew. As one of my friends said, well, they eat dead things. Well,
we call that carrion.
Yeah. A, it's an important role in the ecosystem. And
what's
B,
that steak you're eating?
So do you. You know? It's like, just going to say, if you're, well, there are the people that only do live food. I know. Sure.
And the vegetarians.
For most of us, I would have to say we all eat dead things. Most of us don't scrounge them off the side of the road, but we have developed other systems. It's true. So the part that I actually really wanted to talk about this morning. Oh, and of course, we want to invite your calls. We want to invite your comments, your thoughts, your ideas at 503-231-8187, as well as to our Gmail site. Our email is positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. So you can always send in those questions or comments.
Our engineer, our lovely engineer Mike, says it's the human ones that scare him.
The predators?
The human vultures, yeah.
Yes. So, and that's, I guess, okay, so let's go ahead and look at this other area. I think, as Lynn was talking about, you know, can we deal with other predators in our world and all of that? There's a profound sense of separation between us and the natural world, so-called, that is as if there is what we think of as the wild and nature. And then there's us and what we do, which is completely different than the wild and nature.
Well, and this culture has worked really hard to separate that.
Absolutely. And it's as if we are not a part of the world. We are somehow or another apart from it. And I really have to wonder what this separation does fundamentally to our psyches. I wonder how much this has to do with our alienation, our sense of displacement on the planet, our sense of not belonging. How fundamental is that separation? There are authors that have made that point and asked that question for quite some time. Thoreau comes to mind, Derek Jensen. Also, Daniel Quinn sort of gets around this in the story of Bee.
What is that?
Oh, it's a novel. Daniel Quinn. You not read Daniel?
No.
Ishmael, you know, the great wise ape teacher.
Right, right.
I love Daniel Quinn's stuff. It's been years since I've read any of it. In the story of Bee, he does make a point when somebody talks about the natural world versus our habitats, our cities. Then he said they really are one and the same. I mean, these are the way we make our dwellings. We don't say an anthill is not a part of the natural world. It's just the ant's dwelling. These are our dwellings. This is what we've done with our environment, and that we cannot ever separate ourselves. And I thought that was an interesting point that I, ponder now and again.
I think that we tried. I mean, that still makes people very uncomfortable to have coyote in their city. And like in our neighborhood, we've got an owl at one point, and people were very excited. We were happy about it, but she died because she ate a poisoned rat.
Hmm. And the rat, of course, is poisoned because people are uncomfortable with rats, and so they put out rat poison.
Mm-hmm. And then we got another owl, and I don't know her fate at this particular, or his or her fate at this particular point, but there's an email thread through our neighborhood, and it was, please don't put any more poison out for the rats. We've got an owl. We don't need the rat poison anymore.
Right. I guess another place to go here is the real sensationalized reporting around human-wildlife interactions, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
People freaked out because there was a cougar seen on Powell Butte, early this year. Or, coyotes in Lake Oswego or Alameda. Coyote's going to get your mama, sort of idea. In one of the articles I was reading in preparation for the show, there's a discussion around how sensationalized that reporting gets with a live reporter on the scene from Powell Butte for a couple of nights running where the cougar had been seen sometime earlier, but was certainly not around during the live reports from they're keeping their eyes open, though, there for you.
On that Audubon site, were they not talking about that there have been no...
Well, yeah, that's exactly where I'm going. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to get so worked up. in thinking that, you know, again, coyote's going to get your mama, the cougar's running off with the baby, and, you know, the vulture's coming to pick over what's left. It's just, it's crazy talk. In July, there's a study. This is from All Creatures Great and Small, an article in Oregon Health Trends periodical from July of 98. There is a July of 98 happened to be when the Oregon Health Division published a summary of animal related deaths in Oregon between the years of 1980 and 96. So in that 16 year time period, 76 Oregonians died as the result of direct or indirect interaction with animals, horses being the most common cause of animal related mortality, accounting for more than 41 of the 76 deaths. Bees, wasps, and spiders accounted for 13. Bulls and cows accounted for 9. And domestic dogs accounted for 5. One person died as the result of being kicked by a sheep. You don't really think of sheep as deadly animals, do you?
That's a strange Monty Python thing.
Yep, there. Kicked by a sheep. There you go. Another person died as the result of being kicked by a mule. One man was gored to death by his pet buffalo, another consumed by his own pet lion. All right, you want to keep a lion in your garage? You know, it's a bit iffy at best. And there was an infant.
Cruel.
Yeah. There was an infant killed by a pet ferret. The only deaths that can be described as wildlife-related during the same time period were caused by car collisions with black-tailed deers and one fatal rattlesnake bite. So I think that that really has to be kept in mind. Again, wildlife, we're talking about horses kept by people. We're talking about cows and bulls kept by people. We're talking about the sheep. That's not a wild sheep running the you know, fields of Oregon. You know, we're talking about a mule. Again, not a wild mule. Okay, bees, wasps, the spider, those are not probably domesticated. Okay, I'll give you that. Probably. So then we get really the wildlife-oriented deaths, bee stings, and of course the ever popular, you're driving at night and you hit a deer.
I know.
That's not exactly the wildlife rampaging at you, right? It's not coyote coming through your sliding glass French doors and, you know, grabbing your loved one out of the chair. That's... Well, you hit a deer.
Well, as I was interviewing a woman from Eastern Oregon that lives out there, and she was talking about, she said, well, you know, coyotes. She said, you should say coyote if you're from Oregon. And I said, but she said, this one followed her home one time because she has a great long driveway, gravel driveway to go up. This coyote followed her and sat right by the door as she was going to get out of her car door. And she rolled down her door and said, time for you to go. I need to go get into the house. And he's like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
She said, they're big scaredy cats. And then stories just kept coming to me all week about this. And so I'm telling this to someone who lived in Vermont and said she had actually heard of, there was a case of two folks being attacked by a coyote. And they found out that it was some strange little teeny pack that had interbred with wolves. And it was a very strange thing. Mm. I know, look that one up, that they had never heard of such a thing.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah. But apart from that, you just, coyotes are big scaredy cats, as she said.
I have seen coyotes in the area. And, you know, again, mostly I see them looking, you know, from the side of the highway, or, you know, just sort of standing off in the distance, sort of watching what's going on.
Well, I love people's, they're boldly going down the street now. Uh-huh. Attitude. that's what I'm getting at here, is that's the natural world. Some other predator, or is that us saying some other predator is coming to our territory?
Right. Well, I think that's a really good question, because, again, if we go with my premise that we are in the natural world, that we are a part of the world, that nature is within us and around us, that how do we fit into that system? As certainly, you know, I would have to say we are predators.
And we are of nature.
Is that, in fact, we're, what do we call that, conscious predators? You know, so is this how we, in fact, justify our nervousness? Is this how we justify the lizard brain that says, ooh, another predator close by? Oh, we come up with, you know, studies and show that actually they're nearly harmless. But no, ignore the study. Look, there's a predator over there and it's walking boldly down the street.
Or, as some people do, come up with great stories to explain and teaching things. I don't know. We've got someone named Holly on the line.
Well, let's talk to Holly. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to say, in regard to people living with predators, that I spend about 3 weeks in Montana every summer out in the woods in grizzly country. And it's interesting to...
Oh, forgot about them.
Yeah. It's interesting to observe how my neighbors deal with this. We're the only house in the area that does not keep dogs, or cats, for that matter. And we kind of like to see the wildlife wandering through our property. Now, we haven't seen any grizzlies, but we've seen lots of other wildlife. But the other neighbors, some of them actually let their dogs run loose. And you can hear a lot of barking as a result. And sometimes I think, well, why move to the country if you have to listen to all that barking? And it keeps the animals off their property, too, so they don't get to see them. And it's just amazing to me. I mean, it's a little scary, you know, to go out and walk in the woods when you know there could be bears lurking around. But you take precautions. You make noise. You do the thing. If you're really paranoid, you can carry bear spray with you.
I heard another story on, this was on NPR, I believe, about a woman who had dogs, and suddenly she goes out her door, and a bear has her Dachshund in his mouth. And she just freaked out and hit the bear in the face, dropped the dog, and off went the bear.
Yeah, I don't know if a dachshund is much of a deterrent.
I don't think it would be. No,
no, no. No. I think she just forgot to
get the dog in.
Get the dog in, which it could be. Now, and my friend or the person that I was talking to the other day said that they pen their dogs at night and that the dogs and the coyotes have a conversation.
Yeah,
that she says is really beautiful, that they enjoy that.
Okay, if that's what you like to listen to, that's great. Personally, I don't like to, I mean, I like the sound of coyotes, and we do hear them out there from mm-hmm. time to time, but I really don't think dogs are very harmonious to listen to.
So me either.
Yeah, that's why people are not making CDs with dog barking noises on them and selling them.
I think it
fine
would be
point,
a,
Holly.
A matter of taste, but
yeah.
You know, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in Montana, then, you know, you have grown accustomed to wandering around where there are, you know, obvious bears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't see them very often, so they're pretty clever. And,
right. And they're not wild about people anyway.
Yeah, they don't really want to be that close to us.
Not so much. I guess I'm curious about other people's reactions, because I know folks like yourself who live, you know, in less populated areas where there are bear, and who very much take it in their stride because they know bears' habits, and they know that, you know, bears are rather timid around people. They don't really like to interact so much and will avoid us when possible. And I also know some folks who, how do I say, freak the heck out and do what I would consider being somebody who's always lived within the Portland city limits, except when I was in the Newport city limits, overreact, sort of get into that sensationalized, there's bars over there and I'm going to not go anywhere without a shotgun.
Yeah, well, you don't see that so much in Montana. At least I haven't. I think people are just more used to it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people have all kinds of reactions. It's just interesting to observe.
It is indeed, isn't it?
All right. Thanks for the program.
Thank you
so much.
Bye-bye.
I just found this site about the wandering coyote that was booted from the airport. I guess he was wandering around the tarmac and then got on Max. There's a picture.
Oh, yes. The Max riding coyote is world
I forgot
famous.
About that.
Never forget about the Max riding coyote.
It is the best picture. I love it. Anyway, okay.
It is.
I wonder if they gave him a ticket.
That's what I was going to say. You kind of wonder how the fair interactions went on that day. But, you know.
He'll have to do some community service.
So I also, I guess, wanted to bring into the conversation a couple of things. One is people who talk about wanting to keep coyote populations down so they encourage hunting of coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
In my understanding of and this is wonderfully trickstery of the coyote, they have a very population density sort of determined breeding cycle, that if their numbers are down, more mated pairs of coyotes will breed more pups. If their numbers are stable in an area, they will breed less. So there have been studies showing that if there are coyote eradication programs, there are actually more pups born in those areas, and the numbers sometimes increase as a result. So I always find that, that trying to control nature when we can't is an interesting thing to look at. Also, there is a study living with cougars from Brooks Fahey, noting that the idea that somehow or another we would be safer going ahead and hunting cougar and coyote as they intermix with the urban areas, as they encroach, as it were, that would make us safer. The study points out that between 1990 and 1994, 67 people were injured and 14 people were killed in hunting-related accidents. Again, no one was injured or killed by a coyote or a cougar, but they have been injured and killed in hunting-related accidents. So I'm going to go ahead and put out there that hunting does not make you safer. just going to put that out there.
And especially if you're hunting with Dick Cheney, but we won't even talk about that. speaking of predators. Anyway, we have another caller. Malia is on the line.
Let's go. Good morning, Malia.
I just wanted to say that we have to be careful with bears and with grizzlies and how we look at grizzlies. And I lived in Alaska for years, and there were sometimes grizzlies wandering right around in Anchorage that had to be put to sleep and helicoptered out to the bush. We had grizzlies chasing people on bicycles. We had one grizzly take a young woman off her bicycle and hospitalize her. She's lucky she didn't die.
Right, yeah,
so
true.
The last caller, when she said, if you're really paranoid, carry bear spray. No. I'm sorry. That's not being paranoid. That's being safe. They can decapitate you. And the whole dog grizzly thing is, with the barking dogs in the neighborhood, which I personally don't have a problem with in the country. In the city, I have a problem with it. In the country, I don't. But that is actually a danger to your dog, mm-hmm. like she was saying.
Right.
These bears are extremely powerful, and I think that sometimes people don't understand the power and the majesty of the animals around us. I am careful with my friend's cow,
and
she is fully domesticated.
Well, yeah, and the study I was quoting from earlier, actually, in that 16-year period, 1980 to 1996, cows and bulls accounted for 9 deaths, in the area, whereas, bears, coyotes, cougars, and anything else that we're generally thinking of as scary and dangerous accounted for 0.
Exactly, and coyotes are not dangerous. Coyotes are dangerous to livestock.
Right.
If you have livestock and you have dogs, that's a good combination. The dogs will keep the coyotes away usually. But the bear thing, people,
that's
no joke. That is no joke. It's, you really, really, really have to be careful. Honestly, I wouldn't walk around the bush in Alaska without a firearm. And perhaps depending on what it's like, I don't know what Montana's like, but I probably wouldn't there either, depending on what time of year it was, how grouchy the bears are likely to be,
right.
Are they likely to have young offspring, all those things. We need, they are beautiful, graceful, amazing creatures, and we need to watch it.
Well, I think that there's something to be said for being aware, like being aware, as you're saying, of the season and how grouchy bears are likely to be, what area you're in.
Yes.
I mean, very important to be aware. Is there likely to be bear dens in the area? Physically, where, looking about you, are you seeing signs of active bears? These things, I think when you go into the woods, it's important to not just go and go, we're in a nice place today, but to actually remember that this is habitat area for other beings, and that we are now encroaching on in their world, and we need to be able to read signs. Like I said, I'm totally. So of the city. People are sometimes amused when I say these sorts of things because, yeah, I don't like to wear shoes a whole lot. You know, I like to get to the woods. I have always lived in the city. That's me. I'm really, really a city girl. So, you know, every now and again, I do make it over to a friend's place who lives way off the grid, way in the woods, way in the middle of what we would call just about nowhere around here. And it was very, very interesting as we were dealing with the fact that there was a bear that had obviously been through her property, you know, and was leaving tracks between, you know, her cabin and the outhouse. And I wasn't real sure how to deal with that as somebody who's never really put themselves in this situation very much. And, you know, she was like, well, make a lot of noise as you're going out, you know, do these things. It seems to be a young bear. That means it could have a parent in the egg. But she just had all this wisdom and knowledge about bear habits and how to sort of live with them, telling me not to be stupid, basically. And then there was a pretty big sort of a network of neighbor to neighbor sort of figuring out where the bear den was and all of these things that I just found like a very reasonable response. And I was, I guess, kind of fascinated to see people actually use knowledge instead of immediately jumping to being very, very afraid.
I am not saying shoot first.
Sure, no,
I'm
right.
Watch behavior.
Yeah.
Watch behavior. And you know what? Most of us are urban dwellers. Almost everybody in our country has very little experience with large animals at all, let alone wild large
sure.
predators. So
yeah.
Thank you for bringing this topic up because it's really important and we do need to be careful and we need to be aware that these things, they can kill us, you know, I mean, and that doesn't mean we kill them first or just eradicate them. I hate that idea.
Yeah, I mean, that really doesn't work for me at all. We need to figure how to live together. We've been doing it, you know, for a while, but we get a little wacky and we start talking about eradication programs and sensationalized coverage of things instead of actually, again, relying on, you know, what you've talked about, what my friends have exhibited, which is knowledge of habits of the animals around us and, you know, using sense about it as well.
And respect.
Absolutely. And the same goes for our neighborhood dogs, by the way.
Absolutely.
Thank you for my call. Have a wonderful day.
All right. You take care.
Teresa Mitchell sent me a recipe for a coyote because
that's who Teresa she is. Mitchell. Get out of the back of the building. Go. Go do something. Okay. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Or positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. This is KBOO in Portland. You are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And today we're about urban fauna. Not pro or con, it's here.
It's around here. Us. What do we do?
Yeah. Do we respect it? I'd love to hear some more coyote stories. I've been hearing a lot of them. You know, I heard one of the things when I was researching is coyote is such a trickster that the American sex workers, modern adoption of the coyote service to advocacy in their industry, they call coyote, which is call off your old tired ethics.
Yes, yes. That was the... It was like a big legalization effort of sex workers, and that was the acronym. It was actually a really good group.
Mm-hmm.
Also, okay, so I guess I have another question, Lynn.
Sure.
What do you think is behind the super outright aggression that some people display about anything that they would deem from the natural world?
Fear.
Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that
you
one
wanted a more
answer.
Elaborate answer, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we got more time.
I know.
No, I mean, you know, you see it manifesting in things like the people way manicuring their lawns, where they're talking about weeds as some sort of invasion force, where everything has to be edged just so and kept at exactly this height in a monotone color. And you can't have any moss in it. My God, moss is humiliating to you. Moss is on the move. Moss is getting the upper hand. You can't let moss win. You know, we don't even want to talk about dandelions. No, we don't want to talk about dandelions at all. So there's like on that end of the spectrum, And also,
I have a thing about poke salad, but that's me.
Everyone that has awful. A thing about. But you know, so there's that to the people who, you know, are really freaked out about rodents or about bugs or about, you know, fill in your blank here. But we see this manifest in different ways in different people. And okay, fear, I'll go with that. But what, you know, what gives? How is it that we can, in fact, start to integrate ourselves with perhaps more nature-based or permaculture sort of setting?
See, now, I don't want to live with rats in my house.
No, I don't want to live with rats in my house.
But
I'm not going to get freaked out if there's rat in the neighborhood.
Oh, no. And I love the fact that coyotes coming in and taking care of it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Coyote.
You know, the cycle of life.
Well, and I'd prefer them than my cat who used to bring them in.
Mm-hmm. Concur. I just, you know, it's that separation. And to me, there's that need. Some folks are exhibiting a need to control, to conquer. And I think that is fear-based. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, what that says for the rest of the psyche.
Well, I remember in Arizona when they were first years ago discussing water shortages and people, there were some folks that wanted to have natural yards, like something that was more something more natural than grass for
sure.
Arizona, and they were not allowed there. You know, the agreement for whatever the neighborhood was would not let people have those sorts of yards.
Right, and hopefully that's an attitude that's changing. Hopefully, in Arizona.
Yes, I certainly see that in Portland.
I've been seeing far more gardens instead of lawns. You know, vegetable gardens.
God knows the urban chicken population is huge.
Which also might have something to do with the urban coyote population.
I know.
Just saying. It's like we provide them a snack bar.
I think they come when they're where they're needed. There is a spiritual connection with coyote.
All right.
If you're on Turtle Island, I'm afraid that's how it is.
that's just what we're looking at here.
Well,
you know, I'll go for that.
Okay. Well, Paul is on the line. Maybe he has something. He wants to talk about wolves. A whole nother story.
All right. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Hey, you know, in Idaho, the farmers out there are allowed to shoot their wolves because what's been happening is the wolves have been, you know, coming into the people's farms and taking their livestock. And so I think that Oregon needs to adopt a similar law, you know, if we see wolves on our properties, you know, I'm pulling out my rifle and start, you know, blowing them away. What do you think?
I think some people have that response. It's an interesting response to have. It's probably not one I would have. There is, actually, I found a hunting forum while checking reactions out for this particular issue. And I found a website called northwestfirearms.com. And there is a forum on this that was for hunters. Let me put it right out there. I don't really have any problem with hunting. Again, kind of sharply differing from many of my friends and peers. And there's a caveat. It's like if you are hunting, then I want you to actually take some responsibility in the hunt, and I want you to do something with the being that you've just killed. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian. I'd be ultimately, you know, hypocritical if I was like, ooh, you know, killing is wrong.
Predators aren't good eating.
That's for sure. So you might want to think about that. I mean, you know, there's the saving life and limb part. Okay. If the bear is rearing up, okay. But the idea of hunting for sport or being a little trigger happy on wanting to, shoot first as your first resort, if you see a wolf or, you know, a bear, instead of trying to figure out some other way of dealing. There's a post, it was made last year to this forum, coyote hunting near Portland. This fellow's asking a question. And I'm just going to go ahead and read straight from the post because I was like, whoa, this language is rather interesting and not stuff I'm very familiar with. Surely other hunters in the forum must be like, oh, brother. Come now. In fact, no, they were actually post after post of suggestions for where this guy can go. Not the same place I was thinking. So he says, I'm wanting to go shoot up some dogs. For all intents and purposes, I live in Portland and obviously can't shoot dogs here in the city. So I'd appreciate it if someone could share a decent coyote spot or two with me, preferably south or west of Portland. Seems to me I shouldn't have to drive more than an hour to find a decent area. He says, another thing I'm wondering is how dangerous hunting around here may be. Not very dangerous, I would imagine, but is there any off chance I could be stalked by a cougar? My cousin will be hunting with me. I'm wondering if maybe I have him watch our six with the SKS.
Well, there's nothing a good automatic weapon wouldn't cure there.
So immediately, you know, the suggestions come on in. You know, go to some public land with some clear cuts, about 3 to 5 years of growth if you can. My friend was looking for deer near Salem and saw a cougar. We shot him through, you know, the head. You know, and I'm just like, huh.
Well, to me, it has to do with respect.
Yeah, okay.
And also, pretty hierarchical way of looking at things. I remember a guy I knew that was a hunter always talking about taking them.
Yeah.
And it was almost weirdly sexual.
Yeah. I've noticed this myself, actually.
And that creeped me out.
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering why. I don't know if the caller is still there.
Sounds like no.
I don't think so. But it troubles me when somebody's first response is, I'm going to go get me a gun and blow that away. It's like, I don't quite understand it. That doesn't quite fit there in my scheme of things. Let me not ponder it. Let me blow it away.
Yeah.
That's a disturbing response to me. I don't know. Does it disturb you, listener? If you are disturbed, or even if you're not, let me know why. 503-231-8187. Or, of course, email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com.
So, natural world, tricksters, how do people feel, like I said, with about hawks and vultures coming
into
there?
I feel great about
them.
I know. Do you remember when we first got the Chinese gardens downtown? Mm-hmm. The koi pond kept emptying. They were thinking that there were like koi thieves, you know, and
who's checking backpacks for koi?
Right. It's like the idea of how somebody would be a koi thief was always kind of, it made me laugh. But it turns out, in fact, it was the peregrine falcons that were roosting downtown, because all of a sudden, we brought them a snack bar. You know, hey, thanks, guys. Kind of like my comment about the urban chicken coops earlier. It's, you know, again, looking at things from many angles and many perspectives. So, of course, now they figured out the type of netting to put over the koi pond to keep the koi in, and the peregrines have to continue on their more traditional food sources and not go for the expensive, ornate fish.
Oh, that's funny. I remember walking down Killingsworth one time in the summer, and I was in a shaded area. I thought it was a crow or a raven, and I'm walking up a little closer, and it was a red-tailed hawk with a mouse in its mouth. Now, after the owl died in our neighborhood, when they took it to the Audubon Society for an autopsy, and they had talked about a red-tailed hawk that had also died from poison rodents, so...
Yeah, I mean, this is actually one of those reasons why I am firmly against poisoning things, because you can never actually determine where the poisons are ending up.
Yeah, but it was seeing a red-tailed hawk in the city like mm-hmm. that, just, it was exciting. I'm like, you go, hawk. I don't know, there was something.
I see hawks in the city, actually.
Okay, I hadn't seen one since then, but this was like, usually don't see them on the sidewalk.
No,
checking things
not
out.
So much on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
No. I love birds. I've been a fairly avid bird watcher since I was a kid, since I was about 8. And, well, yeah, you know, it's birds of prey. Look, Lynn has a magazine for me. Birds of prey are amazing, I have to say, and have a very important role in our ecosystems. And people aren't really used to seeing them in the city, but I think that's mostly because people don't look. There's parts
of,
and it's not all of the city. Actually, in your neighborhood, I can't remember ever seeing one.
Yeah.
But I live closer to Mount Tabor in East County, and so they're a little more prevalent out there. Also, and here's another place to go, it's swift season.
Oh, that's right. The swifts. For if you folks want some real fine bird entertainment.
And a little wildlife in the city.
Yeah.
The swifts are coming. Every September, the swifts come to Chapman School in Northwest Portland. Vox swifts are they're a type of bird that roosts in flocks of dozens to thousands, and they like to roost in narrow, steep areas. You can think of it as canyons and caves. You can think of it as large furnace chimneys in, say, middle schools. So, there's another flock actually that roosts at Reed College. So, in Chapman Park and Chapman School in Northwest Portland, it's about 26th and Xavier or so. Starting around now, I believe Audubon starts to watch on September 1st, but there's actually quite a range when they really start to come in and peak. But around now, around sunset, you can go over there and start to see these birds flock. There is a peak definitely to it, with the flocks being smaller at either side of that. And what kind of cracks me up is that there's dozens and dozens, really hundreds of people watching this flock of birds doing the most amazing geometric spiraling. If you haven't seen Vox swifts go to roost at night, you really owe it to yourself to check this out. I'd recommend waiting about a week to get
bird
some good
TV
numbers.
Bird TV, folks, it's great.
It's better entertainment than anything you can find on a screen. I can tell you that right now. And actually, a couple of years ago, the flock was up to about 30 to 40,000 birds. It's not been that big before or since. It's usually more like, 10,000 or so. Still rather a large flock of birds. Can't, nothing to shake a stick at. The thing about it is, there's usually a couple of hawks. Usually a couple
yes.
of Cooper's hawks. And it's really funny to me that we're sitting there, we're watching these beautiful little swifts doing their little whirling around sort of thing. And hawks are, well, hawks. They're birds of prey. They eat swifts. That's what they do. They eat a lot of things, really, but swifts are amongst them. So, of course, there's a hawk or two around. There's 30,000 swifts.
Why would they not be?
Hello. That's quite an attractant. And it's always interesting to me to hear people boo and hiss as the hawks fly over.
Well, some folks are for the hawks, other people, but mostly
I've never
both,
been there when
side.
Anyone has rooted for the hawk.
And yeah, usually
except
they're very
maybe me.
I know.
Oh yeah, you were with me that time, weren't you? I didn't mean to warp your perception of it.
No.
Let me also mention, coming right up at 9 o'clock this morning, APA Compass is going to air, and the guests this morning are Kiran Ahuja, the Executive Director of the White House Initiative on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and two mixed-race artists, Laura Kina, whose work features Asian American history, mixed-race representations, and Kip Fulbeck, whose exhibit, Part Asian, 100% Hapa, promoting racial awareness, is currently showing in Portland. 10 o'clock, there will be Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints. The topics are new reports from WikiLeaks about Israeli soldiers shooting Palestinian children and more on the Keystone XL pipeline protests and voices of protesters, including Bill McKibben. At 11 o'clock on It Takes a Village, Shahid Hamid speaks with Stephen Spruill, senior on the Block Ministries. And at 11:30, Matt Clark interviews guitarist Dorian Michael, who will be performing in Portland next week at the Lake Oswego Public Library. Thanks ever so much to KABU members for your support. If you are not yet a KABU member, you can take actions right now, my friend, to rectify that by going to the KABU.FM website, that's KBOO.FM, and clicking the tip jar in the upper right corner. We have a dispatch in from Teresa.
I know.
There's so many dispatches from Teresa, I can't quite read them all.
I don't know why she just didn't come in.
She's actually encouraging people to partake in the beauty and splendor of the Vox swifts as they roost and gather in.
So there's another thing coming up soon with KABU that I wanted to mention, which is the book and record sale.
And how does that connect with wildlife?
It doesn't. I just wanted to make sure we got that out there, that there's still time to bring your books, records, CDs, tapes.
It's absolutely true.
On into the station, 20 Southeast 8th. It's going to happen on Saturday, September 10th. And that evening, you could go see some Vox Swifts, and that afternoon at 2 o'clock?
Yeah, from 2 to 9 o'clock.
2 to 3 for members. You get a special for the KABU members. It's really fun. You can your books. I get my books for the year there.
I got to say, we're doing it up big this year with KABU DJs.
Yes.
Moved to a new location, which is the Eagles Aerie at 50th. And speaking of wildlife, the Eagles Aerie at 50th and Hawthorne. And I have to say, I've been sorting books for weeks now. And there's some very tasty offerings this year, so make sure you get over there. It is, in fact, a week from tomorrow.
The Friday night before, which would be the 9th, on The Outside World, we do a little preview. Daniel gets a bunch of us together. We do a preview of some of the things you can buy there, so it's the preview sale.
We call it the Broken Record Special.
Yes, it is.
And very special. Very special it is. So let's go ahead and talk to Michael. We have just a few minutes left in the program. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. It's a great topic. I just want to point out that this way of life that we know now is has a domination imperative. And it's not just with the urban environment, but it's more prevalent in the urban environment, this seeming need to constantly grow and move out. We see the urban sprawl happening. So it's not so much that the coyote is moving into, you know, quote unquote, our territory, but we're taking over everything, and we're killing everything in its path. But it also happens, of course, in the rural environment, as you heard from the previous caller about wolves moving into, you know, to what
moving back to where they were before.
Exactly, and I mean. I think that it's really important. One thing that you mentioned was the sexualization of the predation of these animals. And I think that's absolutely correct, because even our sexual lives have been taken over by a dominance theory. We view women in this culture the same way we view these animals that we're hunting. And we treat women as poorly as we treat our food. We objectify everything. And this reification of all living beings is a poison to the way of life that we have now, and it needs to come to a stop. And I would recommend callers check out books by people like John Zerzan and Derek Jensen, and look up writings by a woman by the name of Layla Abdel Rahim. You can Google her name and find her blog. They inspect the origins of these ideas and this, you know, ravaging cancer that we call civilization, that exists today, and it's not going to stop. It obviously didn't stop. We control humans. We have a child sex trade. We have women are still in bondage. You know, rampant racism. All these areas of dominance and control are all connected. There's no disconnect at all with the way of life that we have. It's a one world global culture of destruction.
Thank you so much, Michael. You're going to be our last caller, and it couldn't have been better.
Great. Well, you
thank you for
have
your call.
Day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Layla Abdel Rahim is a name I'm totally not familiar with.
Me either.
But I have just Googled, and it looks as though her name is spelled LayLaAbdelRahim. For folks that are interested in finding out more, I know I will be. There's a lot of places to go from here in looking at our need to dominate. I think that our last caller really framed that very nicely. And I think that that is in
part... I love
part,
that when callers can sum it up for you at
in,
the end. Thank
in
you
part,
very much.
Where, what I was trying to get to with the hyper-manicured lawn scenario earlier, it is the absolute need to control. And to feel that, you know, basically when you are not dominating, you are somehow or another not in control. And that gets very weird and threatening. And I would like for us to look at that, societally, yeah, culturally, because that's sick.
It doesn't
sick.
Serve us,
right?
Or anyone else.
It's really kind of sick behavior.
Yeah.
So how can we, in fact, see ourselves as integrated? How do we see ourselves as whole on this planet, in this world, and with the beings that we share it with?
That's your homework, folks.
In the urban setting.
Talk amongst yourselves.
And elsewhere.
And stay.
Go see some Swifts.
Go see some Swifts and stay positively revolting.
Rivers of time, I wanna offer you a piece of my kingdom. Coming from another world, far away from here, I wanna make some peace with the enemies inside my head. Oh God, at least that. Reply. And voices in the wind tell me skeletons are dead and dry. Cold covers the land, December moon. That's when the queen up a spring takes up her throne. And you can hear the coyotes cry. The face of my creation and my sin, weighed out on the scales, written in the stars. I understand the meaning of the bleeding of my heart, and I can hear the coyotes cry. Coyotes crying.